Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1. In case you were just way too busy to listen to our last show, this is what you missed.
After Rebels, and then reading some of the comics that have come out, you don't really need to know what Obi-Wan was doing on Tatooine anymore.
He was jerking it with sand. That's all we need to know.
That was his training.
Yeah.
He needed to harden his Force spirit.
He must unlearn what he has learned.
But you're right. I mean, after Rebels, you begin to realize that his main focus... Yeah, the training was there.
Was learning how to touch himself without touching himself.
The training was there.
Obi-Wan would be very upset.
But his main focus was Luke.
Guests will constantly be engaging with storyline as they stay at the hotel. That will touch every single minute of your day.
Dude, how exciting is that? They are basically asking me to LARP. In real life, Star Wars.
I hate that stuff. I don't like LARPing, but
see,
you know
I
what?
Love it.
Oh, I hate
I love it,
but
it,
you
dude.
Know what? For Star Wars, I'll do it. And I'm gonna see how far they'll go.
You're gonna be like going, can I have some death sticks?
Yeah. Or I'm gonna complain about something. I'm like, there's a Minok in my closet. And if they don't try to go find it, then guess what? I'm gonna get upset, I'm gonna complain. I'm gonna want my money back. So you think it'll be Slave Leia's walking around?
Oh, dude, Twi'lek dancers.
Yeah. Give me some Twi'leks. If I go into a bar and I don't see some hot Star Wars chicks.
That's the thing. If you go into the bar in this hotel, hot Star Wars chicks.
Yeah,
there's got to be there.
There's got to be. And Leia's got to be there. Slave Leia. I don't care.
I don't care.
You want me to role play? I want to role play with Leia. Give me Slave Leia. You'll soon appreciate me. I will make her appreciate me.
I will make her appreciate me.
Warning, from the back to tank contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups on your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a medical droid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. I am Michael Flores, your host, and I am in studio with David Sabal.
Hello. How's it going?
And we have a special guest with us, Greg.
Hey, I'm back for today.
Greg, you want that Twi'lek dancer on you?
I hate you so much right now.
Let her twerk a bit. Don't say no. Hold on. All right, Greg's enjoying it. That's how we initiate people into the show. We get those Twi'lek dancers to twerk a bit up and down.
You gotta let those tentacles touch you.
Yeah. Is that a wet spot in your pants, Greg? All right, so we have some things that we would like to get into. I know I'm super excited about a few things. Specifically, David, there is finally a little bit of news that is surfacing on the virtual reality experience that, of course, will be Star Wars themed. This is something we talked about, I want to say, about a year ago when they released all these new ideas and plans that they're going to be doing that involve Star Wars. And we haven't heard nothing since. I think the original article that was released to the public was Star Wars virtual reality movie to feature Darth Vader. And you and I were pretty excited, but at the same time, I think the listeners know that I am not keen on virtual reality because I don't want to wear goggles.
You don't want anything on your face.
I don't want things touching me. If you can make virtual reality to where I don't have to wear anything, then I might be on board. However, the more I hear about this, specifically with this new article, I may be willing to put on some goggles or some helmets and look foolish. Because it seems like things are shaping up in terms of the virtual reality project that Lucasfilm is spearheading. According to this article, Star Wars lovers now have something else to get excited about this holiday season. In addition to The Last Jedi, The second installment in the final trilogy stated to release December of this year. Now, first off, I think, is that a typo? Final installment in the final trilogy? Now, that's not been confirmed, right?
That hasn't been confirmed yet.
Yeah, I know those rumors saying that this might be the last Skywalker trilogy, but that's pretty... That's some shoddy writing there, Fox News. Why am I even getting articles from Fox News, David? What is going on?
What type of world is this?
What kind of world is this? Yeah,
I didn't know they cover Star Wars. Interesting. All right. So Disney will also be launching its hyper-realistic virtual reality experience near both of its parks, Downtown Disney in Anaheim and Disney Springs in Florida. The experience titled Star Wars Secrets of the Empire is a joint venture with Lucasfilm, ILM X Lab, The Void, a company who is pioneering whole-body, fully immersive VR experience.
All right. I hear the hesitation.
David, whole-body? Are we going to be wearing...
Have you seen those? Have you seen those things? Yeah, they basically... I think it's like...
It's like the Oculus Rift,
yeah.
Almost, like where you have like the goggles, and then you have...
You have the controllers on the hands.
The controllers and everything, and like you're in a room like where you're like in a set room where you can walk around a certain area, I think.
Yeah.
And then you see everything, and like I think Ryan Dent did something where it was like the John Wick experience.
Oh yeah.
So I think if it's like that where you can freely move, then you know.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm just I'd rather Ghost in the Shell this bitch. Like, give me an implant in the back of my head. Put a socket in the back of my head and plug me in, because at least nothing's touching me. I'd rather have an implant than wearing a full body suit. Just tap into my brain. Does that make sense? I'd rather have something attached to my cerebral cortex.
Yeah.
Rather than wear something.
That's usually the next step. But unfortunately, Mike, that's not where we're at right now. We have the goggles.
All right. Well, as long as the technology is innovative, I can possibly get on board. Now, the question I have about this is whether or not this is going to be that new thing I've been looking for since the buyout of Lucasfilm. Something that, whether or not you agree with George Lucas's installments of Star Wars is besides the point. One thing that George Lucas has always done with Star Wars is he's always pushed that the technology forward, whether it be in the way of sound or visual effects. He always did something different. He didn't sit down, write a movie, and think, can we do this? I'm not sure. I think I might have written something way too epic and the technology isn't there. No. What did George Lucas do? He wrote whatever he wanted and then produced and created the technology to accommodate the shots that he wanted to get.
Yeah, and it may not have been perfect, but it was groundbreaking.
He revolutionized sound. The reason why we even have the sound systems and the quality we have today is solely because of George Lucas pushing the industry forward and not just creating it and dropping it. He told people, the theaters, the exhibitors, hey, if you don't buy into this new technology, guess what you won't have? You will not have the rights to screen my movie. And he did the same thing with digital projection. He said, hey, this is going to be a movie featured in new high def digital. It's never been done before. Guess what? Every single theater is going to have to get on board this new technology, or you're not going to screen my movie. He pushed the cinematic experience forward. And that is honestly the one biggest complaint that I see a lot about Force Awakens and Rogue One. Forget the fact that I liked both those movies. But one thing that can be said is it does not have anything new in terms of pushing forward technology. I know some people, Greg in particular, might say, well, they did do the Tarkin maneuver, but that wasn't new technology. That was something that was already there, being able to bring the facial reconstruction digitally.
Well, from what I've been reading, and I think this is all going to be included
loud
with the it's going to somehow be included within the resort feature that they're having, I think, just at Disney World. But with what I've seen where at Shanghai Disney with all their new rides there, how they're integrating, you know, kind of trying out new technology there, new things there, I think it's going to be able for them to bring that to this to Disneyland and Disney World with the Star Wars experience.
Right.
But I think,
do you think it's be a schlocky gimmick, or do you think it's going to be something really riveting and innovative, groundbreaking?
That's what I'm worried about, Greg, is like,
is it going to be schlocky like Star Tours? Because let's be honest, yeah. Star Tours is fun, but it's schlocky. It was even kind of schlocky when it came out.
I don't think it's going to be schlocky when it comes out. I think what's going to end up happening is that they're going to do a test run with it. They're going to bring people in and test it and see what their reactions are to try and get it right, because they know it's going to be a big attraction, because they want people to visit the parks. They right. want people to not go away from the park itself and to Disneyland.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing I took away from Star Tours as well, is kind of like Star Tours when it first came out was very basic when it first came out, but now it's almost they've elaborated on it by making it like, oh, you can take Star Tours multiple times yeah. and it'll be a different experience right. every single time.
Right. And look, I'm not going to bash Star Tours. I do enjoy it, and I did enjoy it as a kid. I'm just hoping that this will be, because this was promoted as a virtual reality movie. Again, if I'm getting my wires crossed, this isn't the Darth Vader story they were talking about doing, then forget everything I'm saying. Yeah. But Dave, you and I went back and forth about this Darth Vader VR, and I'm on board, but let's not utilize the VR that's already out there, because to say it quite frankly, it sucks. Like, virtual reality isn't very good right now. Well, it's not even virtual reality. It's basically essentially putting goggles on and putting a screen up to your eyeballs.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this is a definitely like a different opinions that me and you have shared on this, is because, like, in my opinion, we have to start somewhere, though.
In my opinion, the Jedi are evil.
But we have to start somewhere, because, like, I would love to actually have that type of reality where it's basically jack into the back of my head like the Matrix, and I'm totally immersed yeah. into it.
Yeah.
However, unfortunately, that technology is just not there.
It's not there. And if it's not there, that means either get it there. And I'm being kind of stupid and facetious about snapping something to the back of my neck and connecting to my cerebral cortex. However, if the technology isn't there to do something, if George Lucas would have done it, if he is the power behind this, let's say George Lucas never sold, but he kept moving forward and he's the one who put out Rogue One, and he put out Force Awakens, and he was the spearhead in charge of this virtual reality program, I probably would be very excited for it, because, again, George Lucas is very innovative. The guy always pushes things forward. He's from that old class of filmmaker, much like George Lucas much like Spielberg and James Cameron. They don't just sit there and use what was done. They create the tools. They don't say, hey, we're going to need a hammer and nails. Well, okay, there's one sitting there. No, they're like, hey, we're going to need a special hammer and nail that's never been invented. All right, let's invent it. That's the difference between modern Star Wars and old Star Wars. Yes, I'm enjoying those movies, the new movies. I like them. We're having a good time. But at the same time, Star Wars has always been utilized as a transport to transport and push the technology. And that's all I'm hoping we get with this VR. I'm hoping it's just not the run-of-the-mill Oculus BS. I want them to utilize their own technology and really push forward the medium so that we can get better VR.
And yeah, that's the point of view that I understand where you're coming from, is kind of like with the way technology has progressed today, it's been amazing how far we've come technology wise for virtual reality. However, and maybe Greg you can probably elaborate on this, is like when we look at video games, right? The Oculus is a fantastic gimmick, but it's been done before and it's failed.
Well, it's not
magically.
It's not that it's. I wouldn't say that it's failed. I would say it's not the right time for it.
Right.
Because everybody's talking about the Oculus Rift, it was like, oh my God, it's going to be awesome. And then they revealed the price point for it, and everybody's like, well, shit, I can't afford that. Only, you know, studios can afford that. But that's also studios that have shipped AAA games, and then maybe some indie studios that have the money or the backing.
See how we're having this conversation right now about Oculus? That proves my point.
Yeah.
We're debating whether or not Lucasfilm is going to utilize that platform, whereas in the past, there wouldn't be a question. We'd be like, no, George Lucas is going to create it.
Well, I think with that, I think I don't think they're going to go, okay, you know what? Well, let's use the Oculus Rift. We'll go ahead and get some headsets, some controllers.
Yeah.
We'll build it out and it'd be great. I think what they're going to do is they're going to look at what's there already and how they can change it to where that it's not somebody on a treadmill or you standing on a, you know, because I remember like early VR, you have to stand inside of a ring and you're in, like in a little circle and you're just like, all right, cool.
It's very limiting. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then, but the thing is, like, if you look at it where, if they look at how Japan is doing VR, like I think it was IBM. IBM recreated Sword Art Online, like the actual game that's in the anime.
Uh-huh.
But people were on kind of like treadmill type things.
Augmented reality type thing?
Yeah, but they're still wearing helmets, but they had free movement. They can take a look at that and say, okay, hey, where can we use that, but not have to have put people on a treadmill where they can kind of freely roam?
I'm just looking forward to VR porn. Can that happen soon?
VR Twi'lek porn.
I want Yeah, it always goes back to Twi'leks with David. I want to swing my red lightsaber around. Can I do that? That's what I'm really looking forward to doing. All right, we need to move into Ron Howard news because there's been a lot of silence coming from Camp Han Solo, except from Ron Howard. Ron Howard has been tweeting out things randomly, images, and they're really trying to repair the image, the PR surrounding Han Solo. When Miller and Lord left or were fired because they're idiots, there was a lot of the morale was very low. It was very evident. The actors all were happy that Howard took over. There was a lot of behind the scenes bitching after Phil and Miller and Lord and Miller, whatever. What are those hacks' names? I forget.
Yeah, Phil Lord and I forgot the one guy's first name, but it's Miller.
Yeah, when Lord and Miller got fired, there was a lot of issues in terms of morale. And since Ron Howard has taken over, the morale has just skyrocketed. People are coming out saying just fabulous things. They're talking great about each other. And this is something that never happened from the very beginning when Miller and Lord took over, or I'm sorry, when they were hired on to Han Solo, all we ever heard was some negativity. And now it's the complete opposite with Ron Howard being on board. And this should be a good sign. This should signal as a good sign for all those fans who were worried about Han Solo. It's in good hands. I know people are confident with Ron Howard as a director, but there were questions in terms of his ability to do a Star Wars film. And I understand the concern, but I just don't think it's warranted, especially when half of directing is not just your vision and your creativity, but it's also morale. You're the director. You have to be able to communicate with individuals. And if you have a director there boosting the morale and people are happy, guess what you're going to get from them? You're going to get good performances because they're happy to be working with you.
Yeah. And the thing is like the more we've seen news about this, the more I really do believe that basically the Star Wars, the creative team behind Star Wars with Kathleen Kennedy and everything, they're trying to see if new directors can come in.
Yeah.
First, because if you notice, like a lot of the directors they've chosen in a lot of their Star Wars films, they're part of the new flock. They're not old guard.
Right.
You have Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and then you have Josh Trank. They tried Josh Trank. That,
but let's just call him Josh Tank.
They had who was the one that did Godzilla? Greg. Shoot, he did Rogue One.
It's not Neil Blomkamp, is it?
No, not Blomkamp. It was the director who did Godzilla. They gave him a shot. He did very well in Rogue One. But
you're talking about Gareth Edwards.
Gareth Edwards. There we go. Thank you. And now with episode 9, it's Colin Trevorrow.
Yeah.
Colin Trevorrow is up there, and he's one of the new guard.
At least for the time being. We'll see.
I really honestly think that basically the game plan is to see if the new guard can actually do the Star Wars films. If not, they can call back on old guard like a Ron Howard.
Well, yeah. I think that's what they, like the year that we went to Celebration and like hearing Dave Filoni talk about what they're doing with Rebels, how they want to do it, how they, you know, they're all fans working on it. You know, they grew up watching it, now they're working on it. I think that the Lucasfilm Story Group, I think what their purpose is that they don't want to just, like you said, kind of trust on the old guards to kind of come in and make the films. Because there's people that are going to these that are like, you know, they like a lot of these new filmmakers, a lot of these new directors, and they want to bring them in and say, hey, here's what are you doing? Let's see what you got. And they're like, But the thing is that you have to do this the right way. This isn't you coming in and pulling, you know, it's not going to be Star Wars, you know, Episode 8, 21 Jump Street.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You're not coming in and you're not going to have a bunch of dick and fart jokes.
See, I like that Greg's on the exact same page as us, Dave. I was kind of wondering what his viewpoint was on that. And this is exactly what you and I have been talking about, that these directors, they're not signing on for their own movie. If you're signing on to Star Wars, you're signing on to a bigger picture, a bigger storyline that's not just your own, and you have to listen to the upper heads. You're in this day and age in Star Wars, Greg, this is what David and I talked about. You're less like a film director and more like a television director. You're coming in to direct a story that's already pretty much set in place. You can use your creativity. You can deal with the cast. But when it comes down to it, the Lucasfilm Story Group, Kathleen Kennedy are going to have the final say because they know the bigger story of the overarching storylines.
And it's not like they're coming in for their own film, or they're not coming in to do some remake of some 80s, you know, TV show or whatever as a movie. It's not like they're coming like, hey guys, we want you to make Chips into a movie, kind of have fun with it, but just kind of keep the same character names and like the whole, you know, biker cop feel, or, you know, it's, hey, look guys, you guys are coming in. This is Star Wars. The fan set here is completely different. They're not kids that, you know, do Snapchat or, you know, do a bunch of Instagram, want to live out of a fucking van.
Listen, we understand your last movie was with Channing Tatum and Ice Cube, but that's not going to cut it here in Star Wars.
Yeah, basically, they have to understand that you're not, like, you're coming in like, hey, here's your material. You really can't stray from this. We're sorry. You're not, you know.
And I don't understand how they don't realize that. That's what blows me away. The same thing happened with Trank on Fantastic Four. I mean, he had a complete meltdown and got fired from the Boba Fett standalone before it even became a thing. And now it's not a thing, all because he has a complete meltdown and can't handle the stress of listening to people. I would be happy as a 25, 26 year old director having such an opportunity to direct Star Wars. That's why I've appreciated Gareth Edwards that much more, because he, as we said before, Dave, Gareth Edwards had the same problems that not in terms of morale, but he had similar issues on the set with Rogue One, to where they brought in Tony Gilroy to take over 70% of the movie. But guess what Gareth Edwards did? He knows that this is much bigger than him. He took a backseat and he worked alongside Tony Gilroy to make the movie that Lucasfilm Story Group and Kathleen Kennedy wanted to tell. And look what happens. Now Gareth Edwards is reaping the rewards. No one thinks of Tony Gilroy as a director. Gareth Edwards has now set in stone in cinematic history as the director of, arguably, some people say this, one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
In Rogue One.
Rogue One. And that also should tell you, if there were issues out there, trolls, if there were issues with Rogue One and everybody loved Rogue One, that should tell you that Kathleen Kennedy knows what she's doing. Trust her opinion. And that should be said to Phil Lord and Chris Miller as well, and any other director that wants to fight and argue with what's being done. Look at Rogue One's success. I think they've proven themselves with Force Awakens and Rogue One. They know where they're going. They know the direction. Just sit there, collect check, get head from a hot PA, and make a movie.
And the interesting part that I want to ask you, Greg, because you brought up the name, is like, me and Flores have gone back and forth about this, and we all agree, we're still wondering, why isn't Dave Filoni doing something?
Well, I think that's because he's got his hands full deep in Rebels.
The animation studio.
He's all up in Ahsoka.
Yep.
But wouldn't you like to actually see Filoni take control of a movie?
I think if he wasn't doing Rebels, yes, but he's doing Rebels, and that's what I don't want. I don't want it to be where like, hey, okay, so Dave Filoni's doing Rebels. He's doing great. Hey, let's tap him to do a movie as well. And he's got to sit there and oversee what's going on in Rebels.
Yeah.
And then he's got to oversee what's going on in the movie. And
I see your point, because I do want to see Filoni do a movie. But at the same time, do we really want him to do a movie and then fail? And then he becomes the suck ass of the Star Wars world. And also, maybe he's smart. Maybe he's saying, look, I know what I'm doing here in the animation world. I'm doing a damn good job. People love me. Why would I put myself over here?
I'm getting blowjobs from three PAs instead of one.
Exactly. And people worship Filoni. They do. Everyone loves the guy. So you almost want to question his smarts and say, this guy is making the right decision. Hey, don't even try to, you know, campaign me into a movie position, because I want to stay here. I love this world. I have control of my own little world, and everyone likes what I'm doing.
It's kind of like what you said last time when we talked about this, Mike, is like he wants to stay in his lane.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he wants to stay there. But again, it's like what we said with all the young directors coming in. It's that any director, when they get a sign on to do a movie, they're like, well, I saw this and I liked the material and I want to try and tell, you know, my, like what I see of the story.
Right.
And it's like Dave Filoni's like, okay, this is set between these films. This is what's happening. Okay, we have room to play because now there's, you know, the whole world's kind of open and a lot of the stuff is now in legacy. So we can pull from that. We can make our own stuff as long as it goes into, you know, 4, 5, and 6. And he understands that. So he kind of sees like, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to tell this story. And then, you know, at whatever time Rebels tells its story and it finishes,
yeah,
then he'll move on to something else. I mean, you know, maybe we'll get an animated series with, you know, about Kylo Ren, the younger years. You know, freaks and geeks of Tatooine.
No, please. All right. So Ron Howard, in a recent interview, says that with Heat Vision, said that it's a fantastic script, a great cast, and it's all coming along great. I'm having a fantastic creative experience with it, he said. Howard, who noted he's still relatively new to the production, said the film came with great characters, a great script, and actors who inhabit those characters. The director continued, it's a great young cast, incredibly strong, smart, funny people who love their characters and love being a part of this. I think we'll be able to do something that is a lot of fun. How different does that sound from anything else we've heard? Now, yeah, either Ron Howard right either is telling the truth or Kathleen Kennedy is calling in favors from back in the 80s when they were friends and saying, hey, I need you to help me sell this movie. I need you to blow this movie, please. We need better PR. But either way, it goes to show you that if you're a director willing to get in the game and play the part, that also, whether it's manipulative or it's transparent, it doesn't matter. The point is that he's on board, which means if the director's on board and he's playing the game, what does that mean? That means we're going to get a good movie because he's on board. We're not going to have these dumb conflicts where people are trying to see who can piss farther, you know? So I'm excited
to get a Super Mario Brothers movie where everybody's drinking on set.
So bad. So I'm really stoked about that. I love hearing this little bit of news is coming out from Ron Howard, and I appreciate his little photos he's been posting here and there showing us that the movie's moving along.
Yeah, dude, it's hilarious seeing Ron Howard on Twitter. And
isn't it?
It's like,
yeah,
it's like he's posting up pictures from set, and I'm like going, normally...
You know he's not doing it. You know it's his assistant.
Yeah. You know it's
like,
assistant.
Ron, come here, take this picture.
Yeah.
What? What?
I'm like, okay. I'm like, Ron, can you please post some pictures of your hot daughter? I like her. Can you please? Yeah. Bryce Howard, please. Thanks. Yeah. Can you have her wear red heels like she did in Jurassic Park, the best part of the movie when she was running from the dinosaur? Yeah, do that, please. That's pretty steamy.
Wait, that's his daughter?
You didn't know that?
No.
She's hot, right?
Yes. How did that happen?
Oh, that's messed up, dude.
Good genes.
Fucking Opie. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, listen, though. But when you're Opie, you become infused with millions of dollars. Now, if he didn't have millions of dollars, it would no longer be a part of his DNA. Oh. And he then would spew out an ugly hag. Millions of dollars change everything. It's proven in science that when you have at least $1 million in your bank account, you can genetically alter your entire makeup of the body.
I was gonna say gene modification is a real nice thing.
Plus, it's the redhead genes. It's the redhead genes. You should know that.
Yeah. All right. So Gwendolyn Christie and Rian Johnson came up with a Captain Phasma backstory. I know this is gonna probably curry some favor with a lot of people who are Captain Phasma fans who didn't really get the Captain Phasma they were anticipating.
They were hoping for.
Now, apparently, the reason for the lack of story in Force Awakens was she was originally not supposed to be in this movie. And this is news to me. I never even heard of this until reading this article, that originally Captain Phasma was the original design of Kylo Ren. It was rejected, and because they liked the design so much, they decided to build another character that can utilize that design. And unfortunately, I think in retrospect, it was ultimately a poor decision because you had this enthusiasm and expectations built on this Captain Phasma, and then you didn't deliver any type of real substance to her story or her character, that it ended up falling a bit flat for some people. Now, I don't think it ruined the movie because the marketing did that, not the movie. They marketed Captain Phasma.
Oh, yeah.
That was the problem. If they didn't market Captain Phasma, then I don't think there would have been those expectations, because I don't think as a movie it matters. I don't think you need to know anything about her because she's a stock character. She isn't there to, you know, propel the narrative. However, Rian Johnson, apparently, according to Gwendolyn Christie in a recent interview, says that Rian Johnson has been very open to her suggestions and script notes on her character for Last Jedi, and it's made her very happy, and they came up with a backstory that apparently, I don't know if we're going to see it. That news is a bit vague whether or not we're going to see that backstory, but because there's a backstory now built on her character, that there seems to be a lot of speculation that there'll be more substance to her character. And David, you and I both know as writers that even when you create a backstory, even if it's not going to be seen per se in something, either in, you know, a narrative form in a book or in a movie, the fact that you have a story there, a real history, it allows the writer to develop that person better on the pages that you see her, even if you don't go into the past, but the person becomes more real because you're writing based on someone you know now.
Oh, yeah.
And so if that's the case, I think we're in for a treat with Captain Phasma this next go around. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Because like even in acting and directing and stuff like that, as a director, one of the really great tricks of as a director you can do is come up with a backstory of your character. Tell the actor, this is what your backstory is. This is what your character believes in.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's actually a really good idea, especially, you know, I love Force Awakens, but the only thing I took away from it that was a slight negative was the fact that Captain Phasma was marketed to us as like this really badass character that was going to come in and be a menace.
Right.
But she gets dumped into a garbage chute at the very end.
Yeah.
And that's the throwaway. That's where we explain, oh, she's what do we do with her? Throw her in the garbage disposal.
Yeah.
And it's like, really?
Yeah, well, you know,
but what did she radio R2, maybe Chopper?
Yeah. She wasn't just standing there, she was bracing it with something. Yeah. Like Leia told them. So I don't know. I feel that it's good, but at the same time, I don't mind having a little more substance so she becomes less stock. But at the same time, I don't think we need a huge, elaborate story on her, because I don't think she needs to be the focus.
See it in the performance.
Exactly. And we already have so many other characters to worry about. We have Kylo Ren. We have Rey. We have Finn. We have the new Vietnamese characters. We have what's the other guy? Poe Dameron. We have Luke Skywalker. We have Princess Leia. Now, all those names that I just spewed out, Dave and Greg, that's the cast for Last Jedi. That is officially the biggest cast a Star Wars movie has ever had. When you look at the original series, there's always the focus. There's Luke, Han Solo, and Leia. That was all we had. And we had Darth Vader. And in the prequels, we have Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, Anakin. That's the focus. In Attack of the Clones, we had a little bit more people. We had Yoda, we had Mace Windu, and we had, of course, the introduction of the Clone Army. But the focus of the story was still Obi-Wan and Anakin and Padme. Revenge of the Sith, Obi-Wan, Anakin, Palpatine, and Grievous. This movie has Finn, Poe Dameron, Faye, Rey, Luke, Princess Leia. Those are the people you have to focus on because you already built them up.
Yeah.
And Kylo Ren. Now introduce the bad guys. Now we have Snoke. Now we have the two Vietnamese characters who are also supposed to play important roles. Now throw in Hux. Is that his name? Hux?
Yeah, General Hux. And
General Hux.
You know what the funny part is? You bring up that name, and the article that you actually brought up actually pointed out that the strange part is while everyone focused on Captain Phasma, General Hux kind of fell by the wayside. But General Hux plays like a huge role.
Yeah.
And there was more development with
Hux him a lot
in Force Awakens, because you get to see him. He's literally the leader of the First Order.
Yeah. He had that very angry, like, speech.
Yeah. It was a very angry speech.
It was that very was awesome. Nazi-esque.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it was like that speech you see, like, where he's screaming and hitting the podium. Yeah. I'm just like, I saw that in a mall. He's like, we are, show them, we are the First Order. And I'm like, and then they all did like the First Order salute. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. It got me going. Yeah. It was a great scene. So taking that into account, we have a lot of cast, and I'm hoping we don't get too much. J.J. Abrams is the one who introduced a lot of these moving parts because he is known for those ensemble roles. He does that very well. If you go back from his very first real TV show, that really Alias was an ensemble cast that was about a crew. Then, of course, look at the Mission Impossible series. He took it from being just about Ethan Hunt and turned it into a real Mission Impossible crew. He does this with all of his things. He does very good with characters and their relationships and how they all work together for one common goal, which is, of course, the progression of the story. So obviously, we know what J.J. wrote the outline for The Last Jedi before he left. I'm hoping Rian Johnson's able to grab that and take Abrams' cues and also, of course, put a little bit of his own spin on it. But I'm hoping he's able to handle it because that is a lot of people. That's my only negative so far in all of The Last Jedi news. That is the only bit that I'm a little worried about, is having those many people, that many people, in the story that we have to deal with at some point. We also have a Maz. We can't forget about Maz.
Oh, yeah, Maz.
She's important to the mythology and lore of Star Wars and The Force Awakens. There's still questions about her character that needs to be discovered as well. So there's a lot going on in there. But I feel that we have room for a little bit of Gwendolyn Christie, at least a little bit of substance.
There's a little wiggle room for her.
Yeah, just a little. A little wiggle. All right, Star Wars Rebels writer walks back claim that beloved fan theory is happening.
I love this.
Apparently, there was a movement on Star Wars that I missed, that there is a character in Return of the Jedi that is starting to resemble, or I should say it's the other way around, Rex.
Yep.
As he progresses through Star Wars canon, starting Clone Wars, moving into Star Wars Rebels, he's starting to resemble a character that fought alongside Han Solo and Princess Leia during the Battle of Endor.
Yep.
And at first, when I first heard about this, I kind of scoffed and laughed. Oh my God, fans will grab at everything. But then I started comparing the photo images, and I'd be damned if it didn't look just like him.
Yeah. And it makes sense.
And allegedly, it's pure coincidence. Okay. Ever since popular Star Wars, the Clone Wars character Captain Rex appeared in Star Wars Rebels sporting a lush white beard, some fans have clung to one simple theory. Rex was at the Battle of Endor. Stephen Melching, writer on the show, Star Wars Rebels, got some of us excited yesterday when he tweeted with a tweet that seemed to confirm the theory. But sadly, that's not the case, at least not yet. First off, why would you even tweet that out? His tweet was, "This is happening. Star Wars Rebels, old Captain Rex." I think it is happening, but he got in trouble.
Yeah, he probably got Kathleen Kennedy basically said, "Why did you post this?"
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy probably threatened his 401k plan and his insurance. Like, listen here, you do something like this again, you're out. You're out. You're going to be in the same alley sucking dick with Phil Miller, Chris Lord, and Jar Jar, the three people we hate.
But honestly, dude, I think it's actually...
Test me again, Stephen Melching.
But the thing
you will be actually, on your knees.
The thing that's actually really cool about this fan theory is the fact that it's gained so much traction and...
It's going to happen.
Someone actually pointed out, this makes sense because if Captain Rex, if he's part of the Rebel Alliance, it makes sense for him to change his name because he wants to protect himself.
Right, right.
So changing it to Nick Sond, okay, that's fine. I mean... We don't know what's going to happen in Rebels. We don't know what's going to happen to all these characters.
Now, Dave, allegedly there was a story already for Nick Sant, this character from End Battle of Endor. However, we already know that Disney squashed the old canon, and they can easily rework this to be Rex. And honestly, Dave, I think it would be okay. I feel like it's pretty natural and seamless, and it would be a great little cool way to tie in a character from Clone Wars all the way into the Battle of Endor. That's amazing. I think that's a cool little nugget for fans
us. I mean, he's become a fan favorite character from Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And I mean, what is it when we, fuck it, I'll admit it. when we were at Celebration and they did the season two, was it season two trailer?
Season two trailer.
I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then like And then it went dark, and all of a sudden you just hear Rex's voice. Like, I got a little teary eyed. I was fucking excited. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh my God.
Dude, people got emotional. I remember.
And then they showed him for like a brief moment, and everybody was like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, he's cool.
And I mean, Goosebumps just talking about it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I've always find this character interesting just because the fact that he resisted, you know, order execute 6-6, that to me says something about his character. And I found it always interesting. That they managed to, you know, get away from killing the Jedi, and they ran from their original, genetic programming? Is that what it was? Correct?
Oh,
yeah, that's what they did. And the thing is about with Rex, everyone's been speculating that basically that the last season that's coming up of Rebels, that all our favorite characters are going to die. They have to pass away because they can't continue on in the series without being asked, well, where the hell are they? The biggest thing that people have stated, though, is they don't necessarily have to die. They just have to go into hiding.
They got to find a way to conveniently tuck them away, which I think will be smarter.
Yeah.
Like, look what they did with Ahsoka. They got rid of Ahsoka in a very seamless way so that we don't have to scratch our heads and wonder, well, why isn't she in Revenge of the Sith? She was Anakin's Padawan. That doesn't make any sense. And they got rid of her in a way that worked for the story.
Yeah. And like Darth Maul. They finished up Darth Maul's story in the last season. And I thought it was brilliant because they needed to actually finish up that story. Now, the question becomes, well, they've quote unquote killed off major characters. How are they going to write off the Rebels crew?
Yeah. True.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I'm really excited. I'm getting pumped for the season premiere of Rebels, which I think is happening, in about 4 weeks? 4 to 6 weeks?
Yep. Yeah.
I've watched Rogue One, dude, and I still get goosebumps seeing, like, all the little throwaways to the Rebels.
Yeah, how cool is that?
You see the ghost ship.
Isn't that awesome?
You see Chopper.
Yeah.
See Chopper, and then hear General Syndulla to Docking Bay.
It's very different. It's very different as a fan of Star Wars than when we were kids, where we watched the movies, then we read EU books that tied in, and we go back and watch the movie. We're like, oh, yeah, that guy has this story.
This story.
Now it's the movies throwing in things from EU that's already been there. That's really cool for fans who are really like taking an active interest in the new comic books and books, and of course the animation Star Wars Rebels.
Like it's for the real fans. I mean, it's not for these new Star Wars fanatics that only came on with the new film. I think they owe it to us as the longtime fans that have kept the series going even through the Dark Ages, as we call the prequels.
Oh. All right. So moving into another controversial topic, and when it comes to Star Wars fans, Dave, and I've said my piece on this before, I think off the air. I don't know if I've actually mentioned this on the show, but it is the fact that the new Darth Vader comic that I want to say premiered back in May, about 3 or 4 months ago, they decided to change something that was done in Revenge of the Sith. And it's something that a lot of people dislike. And I could understand why if you didn't understand the reasoning behind it. The Darth Vader comic fixes one big Star Wars prequel problem. And this is what the article says, taken from movieweb.com. One cheesy, pain-filled no is getting changed to a more dignified no in the latest pages of a Marvel comic that chronicles Darth Vader's early career as a Sith Lord. This fixes one of the more embarrassing, this is their quote, not mine, more embarrassing scenes in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and even provides some insight into what happened in the moments directly following one of the Star Wars most slammed moments in history. Now, around the room really fast. Let's start with Greg. Were you really bothered by him saying no?
No, because it showed emotion that his love of his life was dead. Now, he really has something that is holding him back from being Darth Vader.
Right. David.
Same thing. I mean, just to add on to that, not only is the love of his life gone, but he's the one that caused it. Because you got to remember, the Emperor was the one smiling behind him going, "It apparently she died. You must have killed her." He's smiling behind him. And I'm like, going, it's the most evil moment of the Emperor because he's just feeding Darth Vader's, like,
in your anger, you killed her.
Yeah, in your anger, you must have.
In your anger, you must have killed her.
And I'm like, going, that,
just and you aborted. Said, and you aborted those bastards. You didn't want, anyways.
You know, there's a few things, Dave and Greg, that I have to say about this. Of course, number one is no, it didn't bother me.
Yeah,
and I agree with your reasons as well. It showed emotion that we've never seen in Darth Vader. Yes, it was something that might have taken us back when we're used to seeing Darth Vader all donned in black, very serious and emotionless, with a very stoic, mild-tempered voice. But this was different. This was Anakin thinking he killed his wife, who was pregnant. He lost his legs. He is no longer the man he is. And it's tragedy.
And his lightsaber was stolen randomly.
Oh. He wanted Obi-Wan to give it to his son when he was old enough. That's why Obi-Wan took it.
That's why he's half the man he used to be. Half the man.
So that, taking all that into account, the tragedy behind it. Now, there's also a source of inspiration that George Lucas utilized, and a lot of people may know this, and some people may not. And some people may say just because that was a source of inspiration doesn't mean it justifies the stupidity of it. And I disagree. First off, I don't think it's stupid. But George Lucas was ripping this tragic moment from the Universal Monsters sagas. When Frankenstein is born.
Yeah.
The tragedy of the loss of humanity, the confusion of what am I? The monster is born. He jumps off that plank and he walks just like Vader, or Vader walks just like Frankenstein, and he yells out in pain. That was the whole point. George Lucas didn't make this decision because he's a numbskull and he likes cheesy shit. He did it to drive home the point of the tragedy of this now monster that he created himself. He turned himself into this tragic travesty of a human being. He is now a monster. The very monsters he fought, he has now become. So if you look at the real meaning behind it, I can't ever fault George Lucas for doing a scene like this. Now Jar Jar Binks is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
You want to hate on Jar Jar, that's fine. But this, I don't think it should warrant the most hated moment in Star Wars history. I think that's ludicrous.
I think what when I went back and I rewatched Revenge of the Sith and everything, I get to this scene. I think what just hurt it was the scene prior when Padme passes away.
Yeah, that scene. That to me
that
is the
scene
worst
scene. Pisses me off more.
All day.
Yeah. I look at fans.
Uba, no aborte. Oh.
I looked at my girlfriend when we were watching, and I'm like going, which scene pisses you off more? Darth Vader?
Or Ute?
Or she's lost the will to live.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend it's the more or less the lost the will live is the one that should be really, really bad.
Yeah, well, when you birth two kids that are powerful in the Force, I mean, you kind of really give up everything to them. So,
see, wouldn't that have made more sense, though, even though you're joking, Greg? Like, the power of these two are
so great
that it sapped her of her energy. That would make more sense if it came from a spiritual, like, magical place rather than
she just kind of like, oh, but I just birthed two kids. Bug it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, but if you look, but here, look at it this way. Now that we're kind of on that point, if you look at the mindset that both Luke and Leia have individually, you can say that each of them got a bit of Padme in them as far as like their personality. Like one of them got like their sense of duty and caring, and the other one got, you know, their drive to do whatever is needed to protect them. So, I mean, in a way, they could have easily redone that. Like she passed on like her.
Yeah.
Like her tie to the Force to them, along with, you know, what Anakin gave them.
And see, that's a
which
cool
is nothing but bridled
idea.
Anger. So,
yeah.
And that's a cool idea.
In retrospect, a lot of us can probably come up with better ideas than the tail ending of Revenge of the Sith, just because the fact that we've always said Revenge of the Sith is a great movie. I think it's one of the best Star Wars movies. However, towards the very last 5 minutes, it felt like George Lucas was trying to wrap up all the loose ends.
Yeah. And then you get to the Darth Vader scene, and honestly, that's not that bad.
It isn't.
I mean, I thought it
not
was
not compared
really,
to more training you need.
Yeah, And that then you have that scene also in between. But I mean, in all honesty, that the Darth Vader scene when he climbs off of the platform like Frankenstein and things start getting crushed in his aura.
That's such a great, chilling. To me, that's a great moment.
And the Emperor's behind him, smiling, going, "Yeah, thank you. Yes, feed me with your anger."
Yeah,
show them that caramel M&Ms aren't unnatural. Do it.
All right. Well, that concludes today's discussion on Star Wars. I want to thank everybody for listening. And also, if you like our broadcast and you're a fan of us and you want to help us, be sure to go to patreon.com/Rain Man Digital and pledge. Now, when you pledge $5 or more a month, you now get more Star Wars from the Back to Tank discussions. The first 5 discussions we've done for Patreon was on the Star Wars, the Screaming Citadel comic book series, Ultimate Cool Crossover. We delved into that, discussed it, broke down the could-be's, the did-happens, the potentials for the mythology and the new lore we got. So go over to patreon.com/Rain Man Digital and check that out. And thank you.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1, and if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to fromthebacktotank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search, Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you. And listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From Bad to Tank. And From the Bad to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas. Hosted by Michael Flores, David Sabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank.